have a lot of places that would like to have ferry service, but they're just too far away to conveniently stop at, or they don't have a dock.
Two more Bellingham sailings are part of the final summer 2011 ferry schedule, now posted, and bear human encounters still an issue, even as winter approaches. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Tara Bicknell. Those stories and more, up next. A husband and wife living in Ketchikan are the new presidents of Southeast Alaska's oldest Native organizations, and a Haines man was chosen as first vice president. Richard and Janice Jackson were elected to head up the grand camps of the Alaska Native Brotherhood and Alaska Native Sisterhood. The Jacksons were elected during the organization's grand camp convention held last week in Saxman near Ketchikan. Richard Jackson takes over the post from Willard Jackson of Ketchikan. Janice Jackson succeeds Michaelin Kuntz McGee of Juneau. Delegates also voted to endorse Lisa Murkowski in her race for U.S. Senate. And they chose Klawak on Prince of Wales Island for their next Grand Camp convention. The Grand Camp is the umbrella organization for the ANB-ANS local chapters, which are also called camps. ANB was founded in 1912 and was a key organization in the land claims fights that resulted in passage of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. The groups represent mostly Southeast Alaskans, but there have been chapters in Anchorage, Seattle, and California. In other Grand Camp elections, Ray Dennis of Haines was chosen as ANB first vice president. Seattle's Cecilia Tavallero won the same post in the ANS. Keg's Jeff Jackson and Seattle's Johanna Kabug are second vice presidents. Ketchikan's Bill Bird and Juneau's Beverly Russell are the ANB and ANS secretaries. Bradley Flitch and Marietta Hopkins of Juneau are treasurers. And Juneau's Doug Chilton and Wrangell's Rhonda Loftus are sergeants at arms. Marine Highway officials have increased Bellingham, Gustavus, and Sitka sailings for next summer. The draft version of the 2011 schedule, released in August, included every other week service to Gustavus. Residents of the community near the mouth of Glacier Bay asked for weekly service during a public hearing. Ferry Chief Jim Beadle says the final schedule, which was just posted online, accommodates that request.
Gustavus is actually, you know, pretty easy for us to accommodate because it's close to Hoonah. It's not a long ways out there. We have a lot of places that would like to have ferry service, but they're just too far away to conveniently stop at, or they don't have a dock.
Some of the additional service is being added to a Juneau-Hoonah round trip. Gustavus is getting a new dock that can accommodate ferries. The community south of Haines will see monthly service starting later this fall. The new schedule also slightly increases sailings to Sitka, but it's not as many as some wanted. Representatives of the Baranoff Island community asked for more ships in the early part of the summer. The 2011 sailing plan includes 6 monthly Bellingham runs, an increase of 2. The Kennecott will make the extra sailings, connecting the Washington State port to South Central and Kodiak communities without changing ships.
Every other Saturday, the Kennecott will sail from Bellingham, stop at Ketchikan, Juneau, Yakutat, and Whittier, which, you know, connects with the train or connects with the highway to Anchorage Fairbanks, and then continue on over to Kodiak to replace the Tustamina when it goes out the chain.
Beadle says members of the military moving in and out of the state were among those requesting the service. The Kennecott's Homer-Kodiak sailings will allow more runs to ports further west. The Ferry Columbia will continue weekly service between Bellingham and Southeast Alaska. Next summer's schedule is online at ferryalaska.com. As winter approaches, bears are making their final appearances around town. In Skagway, a problem bear has Skagway police asking residents to be careful with trash and call them with any problems. In Haines, a bear-proofing talk is happening Wednesday night at the Sheldon Museum at 7 p.m. It's part of the Living in the Forest program, and the public is invited. But as bear sightings begin to decrease, biologists continue to monitor where 2 particular brownies roam. The Department of Fish and Game's bear collaring program is back in its second session. The first bears collared in the Chilkat Valley were 2 sows in the Chilkoot. Ryan Scott out of Juneau helped with that first go at the program. Anthony Krupe is helping with the second round.
So in 2008, Fish and Game radio collared 2 female brown bears along the Chilkoot River. Those collars were expected to collect GPS information on these bears and their movements for a year.
The sow's travel results were presented to the public and revealed that the monitored bears frequented the Chilkoot River and the Ferebee, but they were also spotted walking through town and even out to the very end of the small boat harbor breakwater. After a year and a half, the collars are designed to leave the bear by a release mechanism. One of those collars went off successfully and was collected over the summer. However,
the larger female bear was an interesting story. I flew a telemetry flight and found her 10 miles from saltwater in early June and wondered, typically she would be closer to the salt flats by early June, and she was still far up towards the glacier, and led me to believe that maybe she did have cubs. She's just now old enough. She's about 6 years old, and she showed up on the Chilkoot with two cubs and has been an everyday occurrence since then.
And that collar didn't release by late last month, and since the collar will soon run out of battery life, biologists went for Plan B.
We recaptured that bear and were able to get the collar off and put a smaller collar onto her.
That brown bear is indeed a sow with two cubs, but at the same time, biologists were able to collar a second bear.
And while we were there, we were afforded the opportunity to collar an older sow, and we expect that she's somewhere in her 20s and she has three cubs, and so she'll wear a collar for the next year and give us great information on habitat use and travel corridors along the lower Chilkoot River.
Fish and Game plans to continue their collaring projects in Yakutat, Gustavus, and Berners Bay. They don't have any further study plans in the works for the Chilkoot area, but they do hope to share the data on the local bears once it's compiled and analyzed. The biggest dam removal in U.S. history began last month, an effort to restore long-lost salmon habitat. In Olympic National Park, heavy excavators began digging a channel to reroute the Elwha River in mid-September. The idea of tearing down a pair of tall hydropowered dams has been talked about for 25 years. Northwest News Network correspondent Tom Bonsi reports talk has given way to action in the Elwha Valley of Northwest Washington.
I'm standing at the lip of Elwha Dam. That's the sound of the Elwha River in the background gushing out of a spillway and then crashing down 105 feet into an emerald green pool at the base of the dam. Because the sun is hitting just right now, I can see salmon, actually quite a few salmon, circling aimlessly here at the foot of the dam, still looking after all these years for some way over. It's been nearly 100 years since Elwha Dam was constructed. It was built without fish ladders, and because of that, and those frustrated salmon below, this dam's days are numbered. The preparations for dam removal are underway upstream and downstream of here. This month, contractors will dig a channel through a delta of lake sediment to help the Elwha River find its original course. Olympic National Park spokesman Dave Reynolds watches a barge ferry heavy equipment for that across man-made Lake Mills. He says the lake is gradually being drawn down.
It is symbolic, and it seems like a lot of people are really excited about it. This seems like the first major project that's right here on the Elwha and that's changing the landscape. And it's got a lot of people really looking forward to next year and the beginning of dam removal here.
There are people who will miss these two dams and the lakes they created. I found Port Angeles sport fisherman David Mead casting for trout below Glines Canyon Dam.
I like the way it's set up right now. It's been this way for so long, and it's just personally don't see the need to tear those out when we've got so many other rivers for the salmon and the steelhead and everything.
However, Mead recognizes the debate about tearing down the dams is over.
Hopefully it's all going to be for the best when it's all done.
The lower Elwha Clallam Indian tribe set all this in motion back in 1986. That's when the tribe challenged the relicensing of 210-foot-tall Glines Canyon Dam and the 108-foot-tall Elwha Dam. Tribal member Robert Ellison wears the motive on his chest. The words are literally stitched into a logo on his jacket.
It says, we want our damned salmon back, and it's D-A-M-M-E-D.
Ellison directs the Elwha River Restoration Program for his tribe. He says dam removal will open 70 miles of river and tributary habitat. Here on the Lower Elwha Reservation, rumbling convoys of dump trucks signal the decades-long wait to free the river will soon be over. The trucks also drive home what makes dam removal so expensive and complicated. Among other things, contractors are raising levees to protect reservation housing from a less controlled waterway.
So the river level will be higher, groundwater level, and the flood levels will be higher. So the levee has to be modified and expanded.
American taxpayers are also paying for a new fish hatchery. It will shelter the remaining Elwha salmon during the dam removal process.
We've worked very hard to get where we are and to get this project done, and you know, we take a great deal of pride in the fact that it has been accomplished.
Actual deconstruction of the concrete dams will happen piecemeal starting next year. Several other dams around the country are slated to be torn down next year as well. That includes Pacific Power's 125-foot-tall Condit Dam on the White Salmon River near Portland. The surge of activity prompts the environmental group American Rivers to dub 2011 the Year of River Restoration. I'm Tom Bonsi near Port Angeles.
This is Tara Bicknell for KHNS News. It's your news. If you have an idea for a story, send an email to news@khns.org.